why don't you just talk us through the meal?
Good morning. This is Foraging Ahead. I'm Kevin Factor, and we are going to be visiting Russia today. And we're going also, in honor of the first appearance of winter this past week, we're not going to be in Russian, but we will have sweeping generalizations about Russians. Usually this time of year, we are accustomed to temperatures in the teens, and we speak of fine weather when we break 25. But now everybody's kind of moaning about how cold it is and how 30 degrees is unacceptable. But we're adaptable, and we complain, but we can adjust to almost any circumstances, for better or worse. And there's no better example of this than the experience of modern Russians. Most were born into a country that no longer exists, Soviet Union, and seen and experienced historic changes that most Americans can't even imagine. In addition to thinking about Russians, this time of year makes me nostalgic for local produce, fresh local produce. So today we will hearken back to a simpler time, August, and experience, through the magic of WGXC, the unaired portion of our farm-to-table feast that we did last year, for Russian expats. In addition, we'll be featuring songs of Vladimir Vysotsky, the Soviet Russian Bob Dylan, and folk songs from the former Soviet republics. And we'll also be hearing about some original compositions from Bun Fundus, who lived in a tent and was interviewed a few months ago on this program. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about acorns. Last show, we were talking with Gene Craighead George, the author of My Side of the Mountains. And before the program, we were discussing acorns and how to prepare them. And we all got excited and went out and looked for them, and the weather was still fine, even though it was December, and we figured the squirrels would have left a few. But we poked around a bit, and there was a pitiful supply. So I was foraging on the internet for some information on this, and I came across a very interesting article from the New York Times by Richie King, on the cycle of oak trees and their reproductive system. And I'm going to read some excerpts from this because I found it absolutely fascinating. Oak trees, one of the three trees that most people can identify when they're out walking in the woods. And they are home to a lot of food that we don't even realize, in addition to acorns. Hen of the woods, chicken of the woods are fungi that grow on oak trees, and they're mycorrhizal, meaning that they're somewhat symbiotic. And this article is, after a lean acorn crop in the Northeast, even people may feel the effects, by Richie S. King. In Central Park, more than 1,000 trees in the red oak family were spangling the scenery with the colors of autumn. But this year, they were failing to do something else they generally do in the harvest season, produce acorns. Quote, I remember going into areas and you'd get the crunch of acorns under your feet, said Veal Calvinisi, vice president for operations in the Central Park Conservancy. And this year, you kind of have to search around for them. It is a phenomenon happening not only in New York, but all throughout the Northeast. While last fall set a recorded high for acorn production at roughly 250 pounds per tree, this year is seeing a recorded low, with a typical tree shedding less than half a pound of its seeds, said Mark Ashton, a forest ecologist at Yale University. On average, oaks produce about 25 to 30 pounds of acorns a year. Scarlet oak, black oak, true red oak, Dr. Ashton said, these are the ones that dominate our forest, and these are the ones that aren't producing acorns this year. Coming on the heels of an acorn glut, the dearth this year will probably have a cascade effect on the forest ecosystem, culling the population of squirrels, field mice, and ground-nesting birds. And because the now overgrown field mouse population will crash, legions of ticks, some infected with Lyme disease, will be aggressively pursuing new hosts, like humans. We expect 2012 to be the worst year for Lyme disease risk ever, said Richard S. Ostfield, a disease ecologist at the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York. We are already planning educational materials. It will probably turn into a big year for animals being killed on the highways as well. Deer, in search of alternative food sources, will leave the cover of the oak trees and wander out closer to the roads. I would expect that traffic collisions are going to be higher in a year like this, Dr. Ostfield said. While scientists do not fully understand why this year has produced the lowest acorn crop in 20 years of monitoring, there's nothing unusual about large fluctuations in the annual number of acorns. Fingers are not being pointed at global warming. Oak trees produce huge, abundant amounts one year and not in other years, Dr. Ashton said. I don't think it's bad. The whole system fluctuates like this. One theory for why oak trees vary their acorn yield is the so-called predator satiation hypothesis. Under this theory, during bumper years, the trees litter the forest floor with seeds so completely that squirrels, jays, deer, and bears cannot possibly eat them all. Then, in off years, the trees ramp down production to keep the predator population from growing too large to be satiated. But the variability of weather in New York and New England could also be playing a role in the shortage this year. Quote, a lot of it has to do with the initial spring, Dr. Ashton said. Acorn production is high on acorn. The tree is pollinated in the spring of one year, and its acorns drop in the fall of the next year. The rainy spring of 2010 could have dampened the wind-driven transfer of pollen from one tree to another, resulting in the acorn dearth this year. While acorn fluctuation is normal, what is unusual this year is the abundance followed by the steep drop. Quote, in a sense, it's just another trough, said Dr. Ostfield. But this is the most extreme pair of years that we've seen. Dr. Ostfield describes acorns as an engine that drives the forest ecosystem. When that engine is cooking along, you get these heavy knock-on effects. The population of field mice, for instance, exploded this summer. While that was good for the mice, it was bad news for low-nesting birds, like the wood thrush, whose nests are susceptible to rodent predation. In addition, the large numbers of mice caused an increase in the tick population. On the other hand, Dr. Ostfield said, when you get a failure of the engine, things just radically change. Now, the field mouse population is expected to crash. About 90% have died off in similar glut-dearth acorn sequences in the past. And the outlook is not good for the low-nesting birds, which face an increased threat from hawks and owls. Quote, the adult wood thrush will take it on the beak by the 1-2 punch. But in the middle of New York City, Central Park will be buffered from the ecosystem effects of the acorn engine. Quote, it's a very managed environment. It's nothing that won't be corrected in years to come. So there you have it. If you're running into extra deer, if you've noticed a crash in the wood thrush population, it has to do with the oak trees. Now I'm going to play a song from Ben Fundist called Animals. Or maybe I won't. Seem to be having some technical difficulties. We're going to try it again. Well, I think we'll shift over to some Vladimir Vysotsky. This is called Cupola. He's marvelous.
I felt those dirty looks, dirty looks.
Когда смотрится.
I should have known. You're made of flesh and bone, flesh and bone. I'm not the type knows when he's earned his stripes, earned his stripes.
That was, in fact, Ben Fundis. But as promised, following Ben Fundis for the first time ever, Vladimir Vysotsky singing Cupola.
Cupola Russia. Как засмотрится мне нынче, как задышится воздух крут перед грозой, крут до вязок, что споется мне сегодня, что услышится. Птицы вещие поют до всей сказок. Птица сирен мне радостно скалится, веселит, зазывает из гнезд. А напротив тоскует, печалится, травит душу чудной алканост. Словно семь заветных струн зазвенели в свой черед, то мне птица Камаюн надежду подает. В синем небе колокольнями проколотом медный колокол, медный колокол, то ли возрадовался, то ли осерчал. Купола в России кроют чистым золотом, чтобы чаще Господь замечал. И я стою, как перед вечною загадкою, пред великою да сказочной страною. Перед солоно да горько, кисло-сладкою, голубою, родниковою, ржаною, грязью чавкая жирной, да ржавою, вязнут лошади по стремена, но влекут меня сонной державою, что раскисла, опухла от сна. Словно семь заветных лун на пути моем встает, то мне птица Гамаюн надежду подает, душу сбитую утратами да дотратами, душу стертую перекатами, чтобы до крови лоскут истончал золотаю, золотыми я заплатами, чтобы чаще Господь замечал, чтобы чаще Господь замечал.
That was Vladimir Vysotsky, Bob Dylan. And now we're going to move into our farm-to-table section with some interviews after the feast. We aired the recording of the farm, and we talked with the Leifer family who were supplying everything. And now we'll be talking with Tim Voll, the proprietor of the venue that this was held at, and getting his thoughts on the feast.
Dorothy's not cleaning up, and she wants to know if the noise is going to bother me as I talk. Well, no, that noise of the sound of somebody else cleaning is sweet, sweet music to my ears, Dorothy. Okay. I'm sitting down with Tim V, the proprietor of the venue for this evening's farm-to-table feast for Russian expats from New York City. And Tim, overall, how do you feel like the evening went? Your impressions of the meal?
Well, mainly, don't you feel that Dorothy, as a German, ostensibly a Catholic, was asking you if the noise of her cleaning up bothered you because she was trying to send you a message that maybe you should be cleaning up also? It was kind of an alarm or a bell that your time at the sink was nigh and time to soldier up.
No, I don't think that at all.
No.
So how do you feel like the evening went?
People had greasy chins glistening in the blazing setting sun. Eyes were shining. Spirits were laughing. And one glass was broken. That person will never be invited back. Might be sued. Well, Russians, like most humans, start to salivate like Pavlov's dog at the sound of a wine cork popping. Yeah, the food, Kevin. I'm so glad you got to that. The food. And I have honestly, I've seen people eat chicken my entire life. I'm 45 years old. Excuse me, I'm clearing my throat there for the viewing audience. And I have never seen someone be so excited about biting into a piece of chicken that they actually bit their own pinky off. I have seen people bite through a chicken bone, as I'm sure we all have. But this took it to, took finger licking good to a new level.
So you get literally people gnawing off their fingers. You tell them we actually had a whole lot more chicken.
I did. But once the juice got on their hands, it was basically like Shark Week on the Animal Channel.
Yes, or Sharkov Week.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like anyone else, what the main thought that's going through your head when you sit down to a meal, when you plan a meal, is, of course, what is going to make my stool or my urine interesting? So, unfortunately, there was no asparagus in this meal.
There were beets.
Thank you. Because the beet not only makes the urine red.
Mm-hmm. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah. So, was so excited about that. The scientific reasoning for that, I don't know, but I wish that they could figure out what does that to the urine and incorporate it in more food items. Yeah, Monsanto, are you listening?
Сколько у нас есть возможностей? Сколько помещается на эту пленку, ребят? А? Сколько угодно. В общем, можно продолжать. И что, у нее одна сторона, а потом...
Сейчас.
А, I have the time. Вот. Значит, я не знаю даже. This is my song, The Submarine. You know this... нет, тогда лучше по-русски, все равно лучше по-русски. Значит, это песня о подводной лодке. Поется она от имени людей, которые там и не могут всплыть наверх. Вот, я ее пел во Франции... И я по-французски могу сделать перевод, но, к сожалению, по-английски еще не умею. Поэтому я думаю, что ты вынужден будешь брать какого-то переводчика. Уходим под воду в нейтральной воде. Мы можем погоду, плевать на погоду, а если накроют, локаторы взвоют о нашей беде. Спасите наши души, мы бредим от удушья. Спасите наши души, спешите к нам, услышьте нас на суше. Наш сос все глуше, глуше, и ужас режет души напополам, и рвутся орты, но наверх не сметь. Там слева по борту, там справа по борту, там прямо по ходу мешает проходу рогатая смерть. Спасите наши души, мы бредим от удушья. Спасите наши души, спешите к нам,
Услышьте нас на суше, наш сос все глуше, глуше, и ужас режет души напополам. Сплывем на рассвете, приказ есть приказ. А гибнуть в отсвете уж лучше при свете. Наш путь не отмечен, нам нечем, но помните нас, спасите наши души. Мы бредим от удушья, спасите наши души. Спешите к нам, услышьте нас на суше. Наш сос все глуше, глуше, и ужас режет души напополам. Вот вышли наверх мы, но выхода нет. Вот полный на верфи, натянуты нервы. Конец всем печалям, концам и началам. Мы рвемся к причалам за место торпед. Спасите наши души, мы бредим от души.
Ой, и расстроилась гитара совсем. Ну, значит, не допел до конца, не повезло, будем считать.
Okay, that was Tim Vohl and Vladimir Vysotsky. The song was called Submarine, and that was from one, maybe his only appearance for American television. And next up, we're going to continue with an interview, one of the feastees, Svetlana, who grew up in the Soviet Union, and get a little bit of history, a little bit of food, a little bit of waxing poetic about fresh beets.
We're wrapping up this farm-to-table journey, and one of the guests at this meal, a participant, of course, is Svetlana from southern Russia, who now makes her home in New York City. Is that correct?
Yes, New York City.
And you grew up in the Soviet Union, correct?
Sure, in Soviet Union. In 1960s, I grew up on the River Kubань. It's the south part of Russia, very close to the border with Armenia, Georgia, Chechnya. It's very agricultural area.
Yes.
Yes, everybody had a little garden. And even if you had an apartment, you always have a little piece of land to grow your vegetables and fruits and herbs for your table. And I remember my mother or grandmother cooking the dinner, and I was a little girl, and she always sent me to the garden and asked me particularly to bring one beet, three carrots, a bush of potato, and some kind of herbs, and one cabbage. I knew that she's making borscht for dinner.
And that would be everything for that one particular dish of borscht. There's no leftovers. Everything else is being stored in the ground,
yes.
Is it?
Yes. Of course, in autumn, in fall, they harvest, and they put it in the... below the house, there is a space, cool space, where they keep the vegetables for the winter in special conditions. Mm-hmm. Every house had this little space below.
We call them a root cellar.
A root cellar?
A root cellar, yeah. And how about the winters? Now, this there was no private property, as we understand it. Is that correct? Or?
No, we had private properties. A lot of people in agricultural areas, they had a house that belonged to them. and they had a little piece of land to produce some produce for themselves, for their family. And even in the city, usually we developed around the city pieces of land that grew up our vegetables. And funny that recently we were traveling in Basel, Switzerland, and we discovered that they have the same. They use all the land around places where they live to produce some vegetables for their table.
And so this was your understanding of how food got to the table as a child and as a young woman in the Soviet Union. Because most Americans, when they think of the Soviet Union, they think of a dark, bleak place.
I can tell you about the darker side of the Soviet Union. Later we moved to Moscow, and I had a family, two little kids, and of course we had nothing, no place to grow our food, and everything was only in the market, supermarkets, and nothing was there. I remember we were staying in the line to buy some oranges with my little daughter. She was 4 years old. We were staying like 2 or 3 hours in winter in the line with her because I had no help to leave the daughter somewhere, and we were staying and we were waiting. And of course, we were not lucky to get
oranges.
I still remember face of my daughter.
Moments I think I imagine would stay with you for a lifetime and inform a lot of your future decisions, perhaps. But so seasonally, if you're in the country, there was plenty of food, of a variety. You're saying southern Russia, where you lived, was like sort of the California of Russia. Orchards,
orchards and fields and vegetable gardens. They produced everything, but the problem is that in Soviet Union they wanted to revolutionize everything, to find new decisions. And for instance, on the river Kuban, where I lived, they decided to build an electrical plant. And after that, they do something to the river. And now we had a lot of groundwaters. And it was just so terrible to see beautiful gardens that bloom, but they don't develop fruits because the trees are dying because of the lot of water.
So there was no EPA in the Soviet Union.
Opposite to EPA.
The opposite of the EPA. Well, if certain people in this country have their way, we will not have an EPA either very soon, and perhaps we could mimic the darker side of the Soviet Union. Now, you moved to this country. And I've talked with many sort of, not just Russians, but expatriates who have come to this country. And you'll notice Americans, no matter how many generations that their family has been in this country, they may lose the language, they may lose their religion, they may lose, but they always, the last thing to go is always the food. The last thing to go is always the food. Do you remember when you first got here and experienced sort of like an American supermarket or American produce or how we distributed food, the distribution of food in the Soviet Union sounds quaint and also completely inefficient and frustrating. But when you got to this country and you saw just sort of the you know, these monstrous supermarkets full of things, and then tasted the things that were actually in abundance, what would you react? Do you remember the first time you went to American supermarket?
I didn't like it at all.
Why not?
I didn't like artificial colors of all these apples, the size, because I was used to the homegrown fruits. They're smaller, they have some defects on it, but they are much, much tastier. And I never buy vegetables or fruits not smelling it. I smell, even in supermarket.
You pick it up and you smell it, and yep.
If it doesn't smell, it doesn't taste good. And but we probably in the first 2 months we discovered that we have farmers markets in California, a lot of them.
Oh, you moved to California?
Yeah.
Oh, San Francisco or?
No, it's it was Las Gatas. It's between San Francisco and San Jose,
yeah.
And they have beautiful. Market and stands all over. Like you can buy cherries everywhere. You stop on the road and buy cherries.
When you felt, what did you feel? I know I got excited the first time I went to a farmer's market in California. What was the thought and the feeling?
I was very excited because now I knew that I have food for my table, finally. But it's not the same as Russian market, because Russian market, it's a collection of markets. People are coming from all over Soviet Union, from all over Russia, from Asia part of Russia, with fruits that you cannot compare to anything else. It's the
really?
Sweetest and the best fruits. And watermelons, the best. And from Baltic republics, they bring milk products. I'm telling you now about now.
Yeah.
What's now? We had markets in Soviet, and they're pretty good, but extremely expensive. Mm. We cannot afford it when we were living in Russia. Now it's also expensive, but I go to the market every time I go to Moscow just to see this abundance of unbelievable produce.
So it seems like that the food, the quality was always very good, but back in the Soviet Union days, the way it was distributed was very, very inefficient.
It was probably artificial. You know that the... just a second. It was artificially made difficult to get. For instance, in the 70s or 80s, in the 80s, my parents were living on Kubань, where they have agriculture everywhere. They had no butter at all.
No butter?
No butter. And the only way to get butter for them, I was buying 1 kilogram, 2 pounds of butter in Moscow and sending them with a train. You go to the station, you ask some person to give butter to my parents on the other side of of this country.
Mm.
And it's not a joke. It was true.
Mm.
It's the same with sugar.
Right.
Yeah.
That's astonishing. And it's remarkable that the Soviet Union lasted as long as it did. This is how food is getting to people. Regardless of the fantastic scientific achievements and medical achievements, people need butter, the basics.
Yes, but the quality of food was really good, really good, very natural, because we had traditions that were coming from France, in cooking. And traditionally, the food was extremely high quality. Extremely expensive and rare.
Yeah.
You cannot find it.
Now, it's I'd like to kind of segue briefly to your meal yesterday. I don't know if you were excited about the notion. When did you hear about this sort of farm-to-table? Have you done this sort of farm-to-table dining before?
Yes, sure. We have in Manhattan. We have such type of restaurants somewhere around United of Union Square. And they have restaurants that also. But yesterday dinner was just amazing. Just what you expect of a good restaurant, farm to table food, and extremely high quality, and presentation was amazing, absolutely amazing. You use not only the taste, but you use the colors. You know that tomatoes can be 3-4 different colors, and you use all of them. It was just amazing and tasty.
And they all taste a little different, and they all yeah, Dorothy is a remarkable cook, in addition to a tenacious farmer. And this is all very, very simply prepared, and wasn't a lot of excess. What do you talk about some of the dishes that you enjoyed, and what you enjoyed about them?
I enjoyed everything. I enjoyed the beet salad, and what amazed me, the carrot in the beet salad. It was extremely good prepared, and you never expected this quality of the carrot.
You don't expect quality carrots. This is marvelous. It's for most Americans, and for probably many people, somebody getting excited about the quality of a carrot is just marvelous. She did the beets. We talked about the beets because we were having Russians, of course. But they were like your grandmother sending you to dig up a beet or two for a particular dish, a borscht. Those beets were actually in the ground the day before you ate them, and they were sort of briefly pickled overnight. I don't know if you knew that.
I can tell you that it's true, yes. Yeah, I can tell you for this fresh vegetable. And also the chicken, because it's very difficult to cook chicken and keep it tasty. Mm. I don't know. Somehow every chicken I tried before, I didn't like. Mm.
In this country?
Yeah. Mm. Yes. And this chicken was amazing.
Well, they were happy chickens, and they did not see the end of their lives coming. And
they were cooked properly.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. I found the
And gems. We tried this morning the gems with tea. Oh, especially
blackcurrant.
Yeah, we're used to blackcurrant, but I never tried so good gem.
Blackcurrant, for some strange reason, is very rare in this country, and I think there was some disease that they had. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to research that. And it's just not part of the American table. It's a very intimate part of the European table, yes. And if you've never been there, you wouldn't know that.
I'm surprised that the tart cherry is not part of your table, because you have it in Canada, a lot of tart cherry trees.
The season for that is past.
Yes.
Locally, yeah.
Yes, I know. Yeah, but it's very good for the jams and jellies, and just to keep it in the freezer for the pie. It's much better than the sweet cherry pie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, and in fact, one thing I enjoy making with the tart cherries is a sauce for pork, roast pork. They lend themselves to a lot of different uses. So,
do you have tart cherry here?
Oh, absolutely. We have. There's Fix Brothers Farms. There's a farm. You can pick your own cherries. They come up maybe next. As a rule of thumb, and you may remember this next year, and you feel like getting out and doing some farm work, yeah. Is the 4th of July is cherries are in. And
I'll be here.
The tart cherries here are dynamite. And the sweet cherries are fabulous, too. But like you said, I think the best for cooking and jams and other dishes with the tart.
Do you know what vareniki is?
I haven't a clue. Tell me.
It's like ravioli, big ravioli. And we make it with cherries.
Huh.
And you eat it with sour cream and cherry juice on the top. Ooh. Oh, it's amazing.
They sound like blintz, like blintzes?
No. Blintzes also, but it's different.
Ah, all right, lovely. Any other dishes that you care to comment on or your experience? I mean, I found the atmosphere was just wonderfully convivial. We could hear you laughing and clinking and toasting and just really enjoying the view and the food and the company.
We enjoyed everything here, and especially chocolate cake. It's my favorite.
That was not local, I'm afraid.
Is it?
No, it was made locally, but I don't think their cocoa crop came in today.
I understand, but you can spoil any chocolate if you cannot do it, but this was just delicious.
Well, Svetlana, thanks so much for sitting and talking with us, and enjoy the rest of your stay, and we'll see you at cherry picking time.
Thank you very much. I'll be here.
Кто кончил жизнь трагически, тот истинный поэт. А если в точный срок, так в полной мере. На цифры 26 один шагнул под пистолет, другой же в петлю слазил в Англетере. А в 33 Христу он был поэт, он говорил: «Да не убей, убьешь, везде найду, мол». Но гвозди ему в руки, чтоб чего не сотворил, чтоб не писал и чтобы меньше думал. С меня при цифре 37 в момент слетает хмель. Вот и сейчас, как холодом подуло, под эту цифру Пушкин подгадал себе дуэль. И Маяковский лег виском на дуло. Задержимся на цифре 37, коварен бог. Ребром вопрос поставил или-или. На этом рубеже легли и Байрон, и Рэмбо, а нынешние как-то проскочили. Дуэль не состоялась или перенесена, а в 33 распяли, но не сильно. А в 37 не кровь, да что там кровь и седина, испачкала виски не так обильно. Слабо стреляться, в пятки, мол, давно ушла душа. Терпение психопаты и кликуши. Поэты ходят пятками по лезвию ножа и режут в кровь свои босые души. На слово длинношее в конце пришлось трие. Укоротить поэта вывод ясен. И нож в него, но счастлив он висеть на острие, зарезанный за то, что был опасен. Жалею вас, приверженцы фатальных дат и цифр, томитесь, как наложницы в гареме. Срок жизни увеличился, и, может быть, концы поэтов отодвинулись на время.
And that was Vysotsky one more time. And the end of the farm-to-table experience that we had. I'd like to close today by thanking Sarah Kendall, as always. And I am going to finish up now with a couple more tunes from Ben Fundis, and a brief section dedication to Alberto Gonzalez. It's called "I Can't Recall Remembering." These are FDA recalls of food products for the months of December and January, and a couple of the highlights. If you ever forget that, in fact, we live at the very end of an industrial food chain, this will remind you. So, first we have Rich Products Corporation, their 8-inch vanilla flavored pre-soaked sponge cake may contain small plastic fragments. Just
keep an eye out for those. The cedar tree, Tress cheese, and Shinglish cheese. Listeria, that's a fun one. Coyote Joe's shredded taco cheese may contain shredded plastic fragments as well, and that's at no additional charge. Shredded taco cheese and plastic fragments. The Rexall calcium, 1,200 milligrams plus, and vitamin D soft gels have undeclared shellfish. The Central Market Classics, Tres Leches Cakes, which I think translates to Three Milks Cakes, may contain plastic fragments. I don't know if they're made at the same plant as Coyote Joe's shredded taco cheese. The Pepin Heights Honeycrisp Apple Cider, don't know if that's local or not. The Elevated Levels of Patchoulin, which I have no idea. The Rich Products Corporation, sponge cake, presence of plastic fragments. And the Price Chopper, gourmet stuffed clams, undeclared milk, wheat, and egg. And the Let's Grow Healthy Together Green Valley Food Corporation, Barocco Sprouts. These are sprouts. The reason for the recall, listeria. And a couple more. Nature's Own Butter Bread has a presence of small aluminum flakes. If you don't want aluminum flakes in your butter bread, you might want to go elsewhere. But these have been recalled. And finally, Ocean Spray, back in November, their original flavor, Craisins Dried Cranberry, also has presence of metal fragments. Now, I don't know if that was a labeling issue that you just have to say cranberries, metal fragments, or not. But as we are addicted to the industrial food chain, I'm going to play a song by Ben Fundis, talking about his own addiction.
Nicotine, come to me. You're as lovely as can be. Though you treat me savagely, it's still my sweet nicotine. What I let you in my brain, I was hungry and insane. Put all my money up in flame. What I let you in again. Strike the match and watch them disappear. Walk like roses for you, dear. As you pull her deep inside, watch these black flowers die. The wheel turns me inside out. I should have known all this by now. I'm like the leather on a cow, but I'm good to her somehow. Strike the match and watch them disappear. More black roses for you, dear. As you pull her deep inside, watch these black flowers. Thank you.
again, but I'd be right back here again. I might just stay here till the end. She could be my only friend. Strike the match and watch it disappear. All black roses for you, dear. As you pull her deep inside, watch these black flowers die.
Okay, that was Ben Fundis with Nicotine. And next week, we're going to expand our definition of foraging and speak with some people who forage for non-edible things. A photographer who forages for images, and a guy with a metal detector who forages for things buried in the ground. It's all part of looking for stuff and looking. And thanks for staying with me today. And next up is Jackie and his amazing music.
Are you listening to WGSC?
The 90.7 FM
Ica.
Copic.
Cairo.
Catskill.